Oh, crap.
The moment when it hits the fan. I'm Meredith Hartley.
I'm Frank Hutchison.
And you're listening to Oh Crap, the Crisis Management Podcast, helping you survive your Oh Crap moments in business and in life. Brought to you by Me Squared. You can learn more at our website, www.me2-solutions.com. That's www.me2-solutions.com. Yeah, I actually think that, we do all this. I've been talking a lot about how we overemphasize tools in quality. I think we actually underemphasize the most important tool of all, and that's language. Language is the invisible tool in quality because we use it all the time without recognizing that it is a tool. It's not just communication. It's the words, the shorthand, the definitions that we have all learned to communicate about quality concepts with each other because it's more efficient that way. I don't have to explain the concept of how many items had multiple inconsistencies in them or multiple nonconformities. I can just say, hey guys, how many defectives did we have? And everyone knows what I'm talking about in a traditional quality setting. We use these specific terms as shorthands to explain complex concepts. Well, we forget that even though we're using words that have common English definitions, not everyone understands them the same way we do. If I say defective to someone who is not in a quality context, it means something completely else to them, even though it's a common English word, because it has an industry-specific meaning. So there are so many of these in quality, and we speak them so fluently, we forget which words are which. We forget which words are quality-specific and which ones aren't, because we live, eat, sleep, and breathe this language, this tool. That's why it's the invisible tool. And then someone gets interested in quality. They hear about it, and they come to one of our meetings, and they're hearing the words we're saying. They're understanding their literal meanings, but they're missing 50% of what's going on. And we don't understand why they can't catch on. This happens in my classes all the time with people who are from non-traditional quality industries. It's the industrial equivalent of an American walking into a store in London and trying to order cookies and chips. The person in London has no clue what you're talking about. They don't know what a cookie is. It's called a biscuit over there. But if I walk in and ask for a biscuit, I want something very different from the little hard thing with chocolate chips that they're going to give me. If I walk in asking for chips, I want those nice little round, thin fried things. I want a bag of Ruffles, dang it. I don't want French fries. But that's what a chip is there. And we're doing the same thing with quality. And the same way that you learn to use the right terms when you go to London, we have to learn as a quality industry to translate what we're saying into other industries' terms. And we have to respect their terms. Instead of saying, oh, you're describing a defective, and then insisting we discuss it as a defective, we need to be willing to find terms in other industries. Bob Emiliani talked about this on his Lean Professor blog recently. He was discussing the idea that people push back against calling students in academia customers, because that's not their perception of who these people are. We're here for the pursuit of knowledge and to learn and be invested, and they're not a customer. We're not giving them a product in exchange because, you know, learning is an experience. It's a process. But from a student's perspective, I mean, as someone who was a busy professional who went back to school, I was giving that school a crap load of money, and I expected value in return. I expected them to give me what I was paying for. I expected to receive a quality product and receive value for the time, energy, and money I was giving them. And you better believe that someone who is working a full-time job with kids, who is mortgaging their soul for student loans, you'd better believe that they expect value in return for that experience, for the money that they are giving someone. Now, I don't care if you call that a student or a customer, as long as you recognize the meaning behind the term you're using. And the problems come when we walk into, say, the educational industry and we try to say, guys, these are customers. Your students are customers. And they go, no, because their view of a customer is someone who walks in, who purchases a preset product, and they're all mass-produced products, so they're all the same, and walks out and buys it and is done. They view a customer as someone who just shows up and it's a straight-up exchange, and then it's over with. It's a transactional experience, whereas many people in education view it as a relationship. Now, that's fine. Let's build on that. But we need to be able to explain by customer, we mean exchange of value. So let's identify how these students are getting an exchange of value. Let's make sure that when we talk about a student, that exchange of value is inherent in what we're describing. And that's what I mean. I've watched so many industries devolve into arguments over semantics. And it's never really an argument about the word itself. The argument is about the perception of the word. And the way we'll be able to bridge gaps between industries faster and learn from each other faster is if we understand what we associate with the term, we figure out what someone else associates with that term, and then we get down to the root cause. We find language that will communicate the true meaning in a way that both of us can understand and agree upon. And it's always going to be a negotiation. I mean, that's not... There's no set process for it. We're always going to be adapting to whomever we're talking to. But it's possible when we recognize the process we have to go to communicate with people outside of the traditional quality industry. So that's what I mean by language being the invisible tool. The same way that I don't expect someone to magically understand a Pareto chart the first time they look at it, even though, I mean, most people learned what a bar chart is. Most people know what percentages and numbers are. They know what all those different individual things mean. But they don't understand everything else that goes with it, the connotation, the application. I would never expect someone to just understand that the first time they looked at it. So just like I have to explain those components and translate it into something they can understand, I need to understand the process of translating my terminology. And it also requires self-awareness. I need to remember what is jargon for the quality industry, what is manufacturing, what is statistics, and what is not. So I challenge my own assumptions. And that's really the point of quality anyways, to challenge assumptions. And as an industry, we need to become more self-aware and challenge our assumptions about the language we're using and why miscommunications are occurring. Because it's not that people in academia don't want to improve their students' experience. It's that they are pushing back against their perception of the word we're using. And it's our fault for using words that we didn't understand all the connotations of. We need to use better words. We need to become better communicators. Hi, everyone. It's Meredith. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, you can get more crisis management and prevention tips and strategies for free at our website, www.me2-solutions.com. That's www.me2-solutions.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for ME2 Solutions, and you should find our profile. You can also find me on Twitter under my handle, The Quality Girl. Thanks for listening.
Copyright
2014
by Hutchison Solutions, LLC. All rights reserved. But now, seriously, folks, no part of this podcast may be reproduced in whole or part without our permission. But we'll be happy to give it to you. Just fire us an email, which you can find on our website. Thank you.